It's my pleasure to welcome back to the Salyer Report a man who needs no introduction. I am here in the beautiful home of Thomas Meyer in Basel. We've had a wonderful weekend. We've celebrated your birthday. Happy birthday from everyone at Salyer. And we're so glad you came to the planet at this time. So Thomas Meyer, welcome back to the Salyer Report.
Thank you, Catherine. I'm very happy that you are here and have another visit here in Alesheim, which is one of your many second homes, so to speak, if you understand, in a wonderful cultural surrounding like the Hermitage, which is connected to the Grail story.
Yeah.
Grail story, yeah. That's another thing. And now we wanted to start with an extraordinary event. I don't know how much in America people are aware of this.
So I keep posting pictures of the comet.
Okay.
Because I think it's so important.
Okay. So there we are.
So we start with the comet. Why don't you just start? Because not everybody will know.
No. Comet called Neowise. I think that was the name of the, the telescope or the observatorium who discovered it. And it was discovered on Earth, from Earth, on 27th of March. Obviously, one knew about it. I'm not in the details there, but it was visibly, it was discovered through a telescope, Neowise, on 27th of March. And now in July, it was very visible in the whole of Europe. And you have wonderful pictures of the comet in the evening sky over Berlin, that you could even see it from the middle of the city of Berlin.
Wow.
Yes.
I keep picking up pictures of it over Stonehenge.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's also great, of
I
course.
I haven't seen it yet because when I was in the Netherlands, it was too early
in the
morning.
Yeah, it's too hazy. We have still a few days' chance. I haven't seen just very, very quickly of it. But whether you have seen it or not, the fact is extraordinary that we have a comet. And this is a comet who seems to reappear only in about another 6,000 years or so. So it is not one who regularly comes and goes.
Mm-hmm.
And the beauty of it is evident. Everyone who has seen it was struck. And some people think, that's a sign on the heaven to get a bit out of this confusion of all this COVID talk and fraud.
Mm-hmm.
So that leads us to the spiritual question. What is the function of a comet in our solar system? And there I found a wonderful lecture by Steiner, who predicted already in 1906 in a conference in Paris. He said, from the spiritual research, it is clear, evident, that the comets contain some cyanide. And this was not known, but two or three decennies.
Mm-hmm.
What is it? Decennies? Decennies? 10 years?
A decade.
Decades. Where is my English gone? Decades, you have, they confirmed that. Astronomy confirmed that. So that's one example that you can see. Sometimes spiritual science says something which is later confirmed. The same was true with madness of the cows or of the...
You know, it's interesting. I read a book many years ago about the Black Plague and the plague.
Yeah.
And the author was convinced that one possible hypothesis was what he called space dust.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when something happens in the solar system and it causes dust to enter into the atmosphere.
Yeah, could be. So let's look briefly. What is the cosmic function of comets in the solar system? The solar system is, of course, a system of regularities, and we are happy that things go regular. I think we would have great trouble if we will find out every morning that the sun changes schedule. Nothing would work. I mean, we are so used to this,
mm-hmm.
and everything would just go out of hand if these regular rhythms that we can calculate would be broken suddenly, or the moon cycles would just or the planets would just decide someday to move in a different direction. But the comets are those who are irregular. That's their profession, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
They are not calculable in the same way.
Right.
They are, after a while, when they come regularly, more or less. But this Neowise has no basis of calculation in the past. This OC is a very good example. Now, the comets are having what Steiner calls them the rebels, the rebels of freedom. No, not the rebels. The heroes of freedom
heroes
in the
freedom.
In the universe. And he goes even further and says, without the comets, there would not be a human freedom faculty. We would be mirroring the regularity of all the other cosmic processes.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to break that in us at a certain point and to do free actions. Of course, these actions should then be also integrated into the regular systems.
Right.
But to start with, our individual freedom, which we are so proud of, I think justly that we have it. And Emerson, you great Emerson in the United States, makes a big thing about stressing that faculty, would not be there without a cosmic correspondent element, and this is the comets. So in the microcosm of the human being, we have the freedom faculty. In the macrocosmos, we have the irregularities of the comets.
Right.
That's the big picture. And Steiner even goes further and says, and you have even a substantial a parallel, that when you use your will, when we use our will, we produce cyanide in our body. Just
uh-huh.
a small quantity, not to poison us. This will then be neutralized. Every free will process going into the body, simply moving your limbs or your legs, produces some homeopathic doses of cyanides.
Right.
And this is exactly what you find in the comets.
Well, you know, it's very interesting. I watched a wonderful interview of Zach Bush by Jeffrey Smith, and
yeah.
he talked about how some of the COVID symptoms were exactly what cyanide poisoning looks like.
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
There is an irregularity there. Something got out of hand. There's a parallel. Okay, let me finish. The cyanide is in the microcosmos, in the human will, and it is in the macrocosmos, in the comets, not in the planets, in the comets.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why Steiner even says in the lecture to workers, by the way, the human being is free because in the universe there are these rebel comets, and that's the cosmic counterimage of human freedom. So we should think of freedom whenever we look at a comet. And he even said we should compose a poem of freedom when we discover one. So let's have poetry of freedom.
In the
moment we are, and if we reflect where is freedom getting very tangible in the human being, then you can of course not overlook thought, free thinking.
Right.
If we have freedom, we have freedom of thinking. We need that, and now we have a huge contrast. All this COVID blah blah about. All these regulations poured over the masses, and they sadly follow it more or less blindly. What a contrast to a cosmic event that reminds us, human being, you're able to be free. So make use
right.
of your freedom,
right.
and that means make use of your thinking faculty.
Right.
Because that is the immediate point where freedom can show itself, in free thought. You cannot have freedom if people are having a tendency not to think because they are too lazy or if they just believe what they are being taught. So this is a fantastic event. I think, in my eyes, the appearance of this comet is far more important than all the idiotic, wishy-washy, blah, blah, about the crisis and the big chance we have for a reset. We will come to that later, maybe.
So I will tell you, ever since the comet showed up, there is an acceleration of the plans to get to Mars.
Yeah.
And the Chinese just launched a rover to send to Mars. It'll arrive there in February. They did it this Thursday.
Who did that?
The Chinese.
Yeah.
But yesterday, the United States just issued this week a scope of work to contractors, inviting them to teach us and figure out how we can install nuclear plants on the moon and Mars.
Yeah, this is another good example for great contrast between what is in reality happening in the cosmos and what modern astronomy and technology believes there is. Because they only believe this is matter, this is all material, mechanical, you can calculate it. They have no idea that everything in the world, even, of course, the planetary bodies, are dwelling places of spiritual beings.
Right.
So what a contrast. We have a comet which reminds us of the faculty of freedom. There are beings together with this comet. And then we have at the same time a pushing towards the merely physical aspect of space. This is a real contradiction.
So I think the leadership, which is committed to a multiplanetary civilization and has been for a while, feels a tremendous need not to be wholly dependent on this planet.
But instead,
I'm wondering if the phantoms feel a need to run.
They feel they want a new customary. They want more clients, you know. And instead of deepening their vision to get it also not only physical, which is okay, but going deeper to get to the spiritual aspect of the physical, they just go into it's just an extension. It's not a deepening.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a widening out with the same patterns of thought. So it's just what we don't need. We have to overcome this. And a comet like that is a chance to rethink instead of creating slogans like reset, the great reset.
The Great Reset is a slogan designed. So what you have going on is the Going Direct central bank plan. So the central banks are resetting the whole financial system, but they need a way to market it to non-financial people. So the great, you know, the Davos website and the Great Reset is a way of marketing all this stuff to non-financial people. And I swear, whenever I read it, I laugh so hard I could cry.
Yes. My feeling is with all the thing, it depends, the success of these plans, that people accept that we are in a terrible crisis, like we are in an attack this time, not by the Japanese, not by the Muslims, but by this unseen evil force of the virus. And
the invisible enemy.
The invisible enemy. There is an invisible enemy, but the invisible enemy, the real one, is a spiritual entity, and this is all thought of in materialistic concepts. For me, it's all a deviation carnival that the whole humanity is led into, with masks, with seeming things, and this diverts us from the real reality.
Right.
It is all a diversion. And that's why I'm so happy. I think we should really compose hymns, poems, poetry of freedom, because now we can say, halt. We are now in the lockup. We are now in the mask area. Humanity has entered the area of wearing masks.
Not all humanity.
Not all. Not we too and many others. But in the big picture, it's many people enough wear this. And this is a chance. That's why I think we cannot over-exaggerate the meaning that now, I was especially thrilled in Berlin with the Robert Koch Institute, co-sponsored by Bill Gates and others, was the source of idiocy, publicized idiocy.
On Easter
also.
There was such an effort on Easter to destroy the resurrection celebration.
Absolutely.
It was incredible.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and it was global.
It was global.
Right.
the churches were not having Easter services, and Bill Gates had his appearance
ridiculous.
In the ridiculous, yeah, with his gospel of the crisis will only be finished.
I just have to tell you, someone, you know, our subscribers are so smart, and they send us stuff all the time. Somebody posted this on, and I just have to thank them. It was a CNN. You know how CNN will have the host and then the guest and another person? So they had, I forget the guy is, you know, he's got the gray hair. He's real skinny. So he was the host. And then they had their medical guy, whose name is Gupta, in the middle. And then they had Gates. And this is one of Gates' efforts to poo-poo the conspiracy theory. Because apparently the latest YouGov poll says that 44% of Republicans think he's trying to chip us. So, you know, I mean, people are smart. Anyway, so he's basically, first the host talks about those horrible conspiracy theorists who are now saying that he was on the Epstein plane. Well, apparently he didn't realize Gates was on the Epstein plane many times. It's all documented. So Gates is squirming around like crazy. And then he starts to ask Gates about the conspiracy theories about, you know, people think he's going to track him with his toxins.
Oh,
and,
no.
And he starts into this long, like, couple-minute rap. And Gupta's aura, you know, if you read auras, Gupta's aura is basically acknowledging every lie. It's like, that's a lie. That's a lie. That's a lie. And it's almost like a broadcast saying, it's all true. It's
yeah.
all true. It's
yeah.
all true.
Yeah.
It was so remarkable.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good that people get aware of these discrepancies of words and facts more and more. But that's the chance with this comet. I really
yeah.
think this can inspire. And if you think a comet, of course, has a spirituality in it. So this is a spirituality, you say, humanity, wake up to your higher mind faculties. You are free beings.
Right.
Use your freedom and tear off the web of lies around you, because then you can breathe again freely.
Well, it's funny. Whenever I talk with you about the comet, it has the same energy as these things to keep happening where the lies don't work. They fall flat.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's like some energy is cutting through
yeah.
the whole thing.
And if you look at it from a concrete spiritual point of view, the invisible enemy of our time is called in spiritual science with a name that comes from ancient Persia.
Ahriman.
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 Now, Ahriman is, of course, limited intelligent, an incredible intelligence, but it is limited.
Right.
He didn't know about resurrection. He was even surprised by the fact of resurrection. That's a stunning fact. And he is afraid. He is afraid that human beings, under the maybe initiative and impulse of such a cometary event now, use their intelligence to form independent judgments of things that go around. And he is the master of hell, if you like, but he has a hellish fear of us doing this.
Right.
That's why we have to uphold really the striving for individual independent judgment, even if we err. It's better to have an erring judgment or an error in judgment than just to let things float and to just accept whatever is put into our plates as opinions, public or publicized opinions. So I think this is a great appeal to stop being a prisoner of the public opinion.
So it's a we did a great interview on evil, and you talked about Steiner teaching that every time you tell a lie, it creates a phantom.
Yeah.
And every time I see you, I talk about, you know, there's more phantoms and more phantoms.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
We're like burdened and overlaid with the energy of the
yeah.
phantoms.
Yeah.
And there's something about this comet and what you've been describing about the comet that just, it's like it cuts through all the phantoms.
Yes, it can really purify the atmosphere.
Right.
I think people with a certain sensitivity could even feel you can breathe a little bit freer, because it's possible to think this and that and to uncover, unmask the lies.
Right.
And I found something new, Catherine, which I haven't had in the other interview. There is a connection between the phantoms that can only thrive, so to speak, when they have a ground, a bio ground, and this is the bacteria. They need bacteria to thrive and not to starve.
Oh, that's right. You told me that yesterday.
And that makes the bridge to the COVID thing.
Wow.
So the lies via the bacteria might have a direct connection with this phenomenon of engendering contagious viruses. But on the other hand, we talked about that. There is also the question of spiritual and psychic immunity, which of course you totally lose when you give away your free individual intelligence.
So your fear helps connect the phantoms to the bacteria.
Of course.
Yeah.
I tell you, and you'll hear the story that I recently found only also. Young Steiner was a teacher of a little bit handicapped young person in an Austrian Jewish family for years. And he was a hard case, and he had to prepare himself for hours, for just half an hour with this boy. And he was successful. At the end, he went to the university.
That's wonderful.
That's great. Yeah. That's, I think, at the origin of Waldorf education is the experience. How do you educate very difficult individuals?
Right.
You can learn more from that than having just ordinary people.
Right.
And during this time, the mother of this boy got a very bad smallpox. Very bad. And they had not a big apartment. And just next to the boy where Steiner was teaching him, you had the mother behind the screen that was all in the room. And he knew that and said, I will make a conscious experiment. What is the effect if I go on teaching as if nothing is disturbing me, no fear, nothing. I just treat the fact that this woman has smallpox like there is a rock, there is a green tree, there is an objective fact. And with this attitude, he had not the slightest problem. And he never had in his further life any contagious phenomenon.
Wow.
That is, we have talked about the Chinese thing, you know.
Yeah, you know.
So he has gone through it. He wanted to know, does it make a difference? Yes, it does. It
makes a huge difference.
If you come in and said, oh, it might be
there. Your fear creates a pathway.
Exactly.
Right.
Now, Ahriman is the master of fear.
Right.
But his utmost fear is that we think him and we meet him with our thoughts. That's why he tries to pull our intelligence, our individual intelligence, out of our noses like worms. That's not a very nice picture, but it's a fact.
Uh-huh.
That's why there is a behind all the economic and political wars, there is a spiritual war between Michael and Ahriman, or Ahriman against Michael, and that reflects in Ahriman's attempt to make our thinking either purely materialistic, like people who think it is my brain that thinks, which is a very thoughtless thing, of course. You can easily show how thoughtless this is. And
if it's just your brain that thinks, why do they need 6 feet distancing?
Yeah.
Yeah, because your aura is thinking.
Yeah. The six, and who has come to the 6 feet? Maybe it's 7.5. Maybe their calculation was not right. It's so arbitrary. It's also arbitrary. And the war against thinking is one of the deepest war cases today. And you have the mainstream not thinking press, so to speak, and you have a few people who think, oh no, that's not what I want. So you have these good independent researchers, like you have many, like Corbett and Rappaport and others. And I think these are, in a way, the human comets in the present spiritual life on Earth.
Yeah, absolutely.
They are the comets.
Yes.
So we have a community of comets. We have to cultivate that.
Yeah,
community
absolutely.
Of, we do that.
Yeah.
Every time we meet and others.
Yeah.
So this is such a huge thing. And if you see the photos, how visibly this planet comet comes and say, look at me, I'm also here, but I appeal to you deeper in inner freedom faculty. Make use of it, yeah. Or you will be as those wish who make their little plans,
right,
that look so huge for right. the whole humanity.
So I'm, as you know, I'm on my way to Lake Constance. And
yeah.
one of the things we wanted to talk about at Lake Constance was, I was very inspired by a talk I saw given by Rupert Sheldrake about the fact we've had 400 years of the mechanical model. It doesn't work because it's yeah. anti-life, and it fits exactly with all my work on economics. So part of our discussion at Lake Constance is, we're gathering to discuss, okay, what would a living model look like?
Yeah.
And because I believe what's going on will fail. And so we need to come up with something that will work. Anyway, I was talking with a wonderful subscriber who said to me, we're animals and they're trying to turn us into plants. And you said, well, first we were a divine human and then they had to turn us into animals. And now they're vegetables. So they're trying to turn us into vegetables. So what I realized is it's so important if we're going to cut through to ensure that we remain divine human.
Yeah.
And that's where our freedom comes from, by divine authority.
Or we regain the faculty because yeah. we were, but we have lost it. We have forgotten. Forgetfulness is an important factor. We have talked about that yesterday.
Right.
And we have to get conscious of our origins.
Right.
We have to behave like salmons who have the tendency always to go back to the origin where they come from, the fish.
So for me, if I want to create a living model, it's much more important to worry about how I return to divine human, each one of us.
Yes.
Because if each one of us can do it,
yes,
we're there.
Yes. Yes, that you cannot directly teach anyone or
right.
try. Let me make a remark to Rupert Sheldrake, because I happen to know him a bit, and I know he speaks about the
morphogenic fields. Yeah.
In the language of spiritual science of Steiner, this is nothing else than the etheric world.
Yeah.
The etheric. And
yeah.
I'm almost sure he knows Steiner yeah. in his way. But I think he is important because he questions all these old dogmas.
Yeah.
And he makes a whole list of things that are being absolute beliefs.
Well, did I tell you how I ever got onto Sheldrake?
No.
So in the early 90s, I read The Presence of the Past, so his theory of morphogenic fields. Mm-hmm. And I was working with the data, I was collecting all the data on the federal government money. And instead of, it's organized by function, transportation, housing, military. But I organized it and reorganized it and looked at it by place
uh-huh.
and by environmental and living ecosystems. And what I discovered is, all the things they taught me in business school about how resources work in a market economy was not true. It organized around morphogenic fields. So morphogenic fields was absolutely true because it was the hypothesis that explained how the money worked by place.
Mm-hmm.
And so it revolutionized my thinking about life, about markets, but how economies work.
So you got aware in that direction.
Right.
Connection with of Rupert Sheldrake. Yeah. There is a movie about by him. Have you seen that in London or 2 or 3 years ago, where he catalogues about 13 dogmas of science which we should get rid of?
Yes, and I remember there was great controversy because they kept taking it down.
Of course. He is not very popular. I think comets.
Oh, I think he's very popular.
Yes.
Yeah.
If you place yourself into a comet, what would the planets with their regular thing say if a comet appears? What is he doing here? He disturbs our ordinary, ordered course of evolution.
Mm-hmm.
They don't like these things, the others. So, but anyway, we should make a poem of
freedom.
Right. And of individualism. Which right. is often confused. Individualism, true individualism, is not egotism.
Right.
Because egotism is not moving in large understanding concepts. It's always narrow.
But I think that our poem of freedom for each one of us has to part of it has to be about how we free ourselves to return to being the divine human.
Yeah.
Each one of us.
Yeah.
And to do that, we could start at a very simple basis. Now, I say something maybe very surprising to some of our listeners. You have a divine within you. If you don't have it within you, you can't find it. You can't find something which you have nothing of in you. So where is it? And one level for our modern consciousness is thinking, not my thinking.
Right.
If I say my thinking, if I say me, that is a creation of the higher to say me. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
So I am, in a way, having something in me that goes totally beyond me.
Right.
It is coming, reaching into me. And this is like Jacob's ladder.
Yeah.
If we get there, we can climb to the divine origin.
Right.
But today, most people, if they look inside, they think it's all me enclosed. But they don't see that there is a ladder coming into this inside, seemingly closed space.
You know, the Stone of Destiny was said to be a piece of Jacob's ladder.
Yes. Yeah. That connects.
Yeah.
So we have to find the lowest
rung.
Step. What?
Rung.
Rung, yes.
Rung on the ladder.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And this, you find it also wonderfully pictorial in the Notre Dame of Paris. You find a woman, which is philosophy, and in front of her is a ladder with 9 steps. Or what did you say?
Rungs. 9 rungs.
Yes. These are the hierarchies. So how we can get up, that is, I think, a good answer to this cosmic event, that we try to go back to the cosmos, but stop thinking the cosmos is only a collection of materialistic things that we can only see with our physical senses. Right.
You said a comet came during the French Revolution.
In the French Revolution, I forgot which one it was, in the Reformation time.
Okay.
And somebody who has looked through history has said, whenever there are spiritual renewal movements, you had comets.
Right.
And in the last part of the 19th century, it goes back. And in the 20th century, in the beginning, you had one big comet that was Halley.
Uh-huh.
But you had not many comets. So the 20th century is not a very productive one spiritually.
So why do... Whenever I get a picture of the comet, it's often pictured over Stonehenge. Is there a connection?
Well, I don't know, but I'm sure from what I know, in Stonehenge you had the Celtic initiates.
Yeah.
And they knew about the spiritual side of the cosmos, and they knew about the stars, and so they will have known about the comets also.
Right.
This is an initiate state.
Right.
Where they, well, that's another subject. I haven't seen that, but that's, of course, very good.
So I was talking to you yesterday about the divine human, and I had an amazing insight.
Oh.
And that always happens when I'm with you. I'm struggling with something, and then I talk with you, and then you just pop these things out, and suddenly it's like the comet. Everything breaks. I can see clearly. But we were talking, you know, one of the things I most love about our discussions about Gideon was that you were the person who told me that Michael was the guardian angel.
Yeah.
And the story of Gideon, which I hadn't
realized.
Of the
Hebrews, the Jewish for a while. And later he became the guardian folk spirit of the German.
Really?
Yes.
Isn't that interesting?
That explains why they are so, in a way...
intertwined.
Yes. In the good and in the bad.
Yeah.
Because in the good, these two peoples have a Michaelic mission, which is a Michael characteristic for the whole of humanity. It's not only a folk mission to prepare Christ.
Yeah.
And thus the Germans have not only a folk mission, but to spread cultural seeds all over the world.
Yeah.
And if nationalism comes into these two people, it's much worse than nationalism with any other people. Because it's much less true to our own nature.
Right.
And that happens with the Jewish. Look at Israel, that happened with the Germans.
I don't think of Israel though as Jewish. I think of it as sort of if one of the worst factions of transnational organized crime got a hold of a sovereign government.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. It's
No, Gideon is a Michaelic figure, that's why, and I'm very, I have to repeat that, I'm very grateful to you to have put myself to my interest for Gideon. I didn't know, I only know the next story in the same book, which is about Samson and Delilah, which is also interesting. I was familiar also by the operas of the French composer, what, Saint-Saëns, I think.
Yeah.
But there is no Gideon opera so far.
We need a Gideon opera. There's something to do.
Yes, there's something to do.
So
we have seen it in Charlotte.
Yeah. Yeah, the Gideon.
So they knew about him.
Yeah.
And there is a writer, I think we quoted him in the last interview, who asked the question in a chapter of his book, who is like Gideon?
Mm-hmm.
Which ruler has this mentality of do it for higher purposes than his own ego?
So in the story of Gideon, and I should mention for those who haven't heard it, Thomas and I did an interview on Gideon, and you should really listen to that as a prelude to this. But in the story of Gideon, he makes the angel of the Lord makes clear that Gideon can only go into battle with people who are both faithful and competent. And his test, he makes Gideon put his, you know, he calls for an army, and then he tells, no, they're not all faithful. You got to get the scared guys to go home. So he tells the scared guys to go home. And the angel comes back and he says, no, they're not all competent. And so you have to test them for competency. And so the test is he invites everybody to go to the river and drink the water. And the ones who don't keep their eyes on the horizon while they're cupping the water, but look down at the water, the ones who look down at the water, he tells to go home.
Yeah.
And the message is, you can't afford to not keep your eye on the horizon.
Exactly. And that's a Michaelic gesture. There are good paintings of Michael, not all, where you see he is looking into the distance and up, while at the same time being aware what is down there and fighting it. But he doesn't do that.
Right, he doesn't look down.
That's a Michaelic gesture in the Gideon story, by the way.
Right.
It's only clear now.
Right.
To me.
I didn't realize that. That's new.
That's new. You inspired.
It's true. He doesn't look down. He keeps his eye on the horizon. So I think it's so important. If you look at all the things that are going on right now, many of them are designed to keep us, our eyes off the horizon.
Exactly.
And that's why I think one of the reasons I've worked so hard on this piece on currencies and to understand what the leadership is up to and why they're doing it is to help us keep our eyes on the horizon.
Yeah.
Because it's spiritual, it's political, it's economic, but it's so easy to get lost in the details. And of course, all these different occult things they're doing are designed to oversimplify and keep you kind of stuck in the mud.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. And a very serious aspect of that is, according to Steiner, in 6,000 years, we will have a terrible war of all against all. And he speaks of beings that are the result of our abstract materialistic thinking of today. These thoughts, materialistic thoughts, will become beings, and they are somewhere between plant and mineral beings.
Ouch.
And we all live in that, and it's a web. He uses the term web.
Wow.
It's a web of these beings which are the materialized, incarnated result of our abstract thoughts, which have not the courage to become also thoughts to look upwards into the spiritual and talk about Michael and Ahriman, the hierarchies. These material thoughts will become beings, and all those people who are until then, after maybe six further incarnations or so, have not lifted the inner to the higher spiritual realms, they will be like trapped into this mess.
So I think, you know, when I talk with subscribers, the things that most trouble them, and these are my words, not theirs, is they very much want to find like-minded people, because I think all the propaganda and mind control is debasing their field.
Yeah.
And they're struggling with serious pollution. Yes. It's a mental pollution.
Yes.
Yeah.
I agree. That's why it's a very good moment. I repeat, I think the appearance of this comet is a wonderful gift from higher powers,
right,
to remind us, don't let you sink into this morass of lies and immorality. It's endless. Keep the eyes up, and that means not only on the physical mass, but on the spiritual realms behind all the physicals.
There was a long period in my life when I had to sort of go it alone. And I remember thinking yesterday, so yesterday you had a beautiful birthday party, and we were sitting in the living room, and everyone was gathered in a big circle, and your wonderful friend played Chopin, and my favorite prelude.
Really?
Yes.
Which one?
Favorite.
The Rainbow Prelude? The second?
I think it's C minor, the first one
he played. The first one with the large.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is great.
It's beautiful. And, you know, the flowers are beautiful. The sunlight's coming in. The people are so wonderful. And I have known and met many of them. But you feel like you're part of, you know, and I'm looking up at the picture. Is it Goethe or Schiller?
Goethe.
Yeah. So I'm looking up at the picture of Goethe. And you just feel so supported in your efforts to keep your eyes on the horizon. You just feel that energy.
Yeah.
And I find a need to be with people who can help me do that.
That's very healthy.
Yeah.
And I'm happy that we found, I mean, this is a process of 10, 20, 30 years.
Yes.
That we have this. And this is only done by, I think, working with the same people or the same place for a long time is still one of the best things we can do.
Yeah.
Or coming back to the same people instead of...
Well, you know, it's amazing. A lot of people in our network want to come to the workshop that we have in Basel on the 29th.
Yeah, yeah.
And I can tell when I'm interacting with them, they just want to plug into that energy.
That's very good.
Yeah.
They feel something.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think what is good, because otherwise we would have a luciferic tendency. No, we have talks about the situation now, you know.
Yeah,
the connection of both is important also.
Yeah.
And all they are all ready for that. Yeah. So, hail to this comet. This is a gift. I'm sorry I have to stop my enthusiasm, but I think it's so deep going important that I have read people saying, that's like a script on the heaven. What does it want to tell us?
When are you going to write your poem to freedom?
I don't know whether I'm doing it.
Uh-huh.
But I can try. But I will certainly mention the whole comet thing in the next editorial.
Okay.
With a photo of Berlin. Berlin is especially important.
So yesterday, I was amazed at how many people had read the piece you republished.
Yeah.
Was it in Europa and the Present Age, both?
You mean the piece on...
Rappaport.
Yeah.
Was it in both Europa and the Present? Okay,
yes.
So you have, for those who don't know, Thomas has two wonderful magazines. One in German is Europa, and then in English is The Present Age. And so you took a portion of our discussion with Rappaport about the COVID-19 and published it. And many, many people came up, and I was surprised to hear that Rappaport was so...
Brilliant. Yeah. Well received.
Yeah.
And also the other one, what's his name? Corbett?
Corbett.
Corbett.
Yeah.
He's brilliant.
Yes.
So we're going on like that and keep the eye on the horizon. By the way, you mentioned Goethe. There is an important fact of reincarnation in the concrete sense. Goethe was the individual who composed the Genesis in a past incarnation.
Ah, really?
So he knows the Gideon story.
Yeah.
And one of the reincarnations of Goethe, there are several in Rome and this and that, and is Moses.
Really? Wow.
There are only...
I would never have connected Goethe with Moses.
That shows and that explains to a certain degree that he had a high respect of the Old Testament. He learned even Hebrew when he was young.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people who felt that connection.
Or he remembered Hebrew.
No,
he
I
learned
think
or he remembered.
He started to learn.
Yeah.
He started to learn. And he had a great respect. And there is a phenomenon in Goethe's life that many people don't understand. He never lost his love and admiration for Napoleon as a German. Also, Napoleon did nasty things also to Germany. But
right.
Napoleon was always highly respected by Goethe. And he belongs into that same period in history.
Yeah, I just read a phenomenal book on central banking, the history of central banking, and got a much deeper respect for Napoleon.
Yeah.
He canceled usury.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Got him in a lot of trouble.
Napoleon is a case of which Steiner says he has forgotten his pre-earthly spiritual... when you have a name, what do you want to do on earth? You have a pre-earthly purpose.
Yeah.
And in a way, he forgot that.
Yeah.
And at the end of his life, when he was in St. Helena, he writes his memoirs. And there you have passages which reflects that he was actually wanting a peaceful Europe, unification of Europe.
Uh-huh.
So something of his deeper mission, the mission he forgot,
right,
came up again at the end. But he was a great individual, no question, with
right,
a great
remarkable
future.
Remarkable.
And Goethe felt that. And Napoleon read Goethe's novels in translation.
Uh-huh.
And when they first met, I think they only met once in Erfurt in Germany, 1808. He had in his pocket Werther. That's the love novel by Goethe, which made him famous.
Uh-huh.
And Napoleon asked questions like, why did you do this like that and not like that? So he knew everything. And Goethe admitted that some of the questions were not that stupid.
Uh-huh.
So he had a deep connection to Goethe also.
Isn't that interesting?
That's very interesting.
I never knew that.
No, that's, well, you can find in biographies. And the encounter of Goethe and Napoleon in occupied Germany,
uh-huh,
had a conversation about these things, among others. So the history, you know, and Napoleon was the man who made a very good statement about ordinary history. He said, it is a fable convenue, that is a fable that everyone agrees to.
Ah.
Napoleon said that.
He's right.
He's right. That's what we are living in. We are living in fable convenu. Convenu.
Yeah, well, everybody doesn't agree to
agreed
it.
Agreed lies. agreement on lies as being truth.
See, that's why it's so important to not agree. And that's why I keep telling everybody, you can't call them vaccines.
Yeah.
You cannot agree
to
that lie because the expense of that lie is fantastic.
Yeah. I agree totally. Good.
Okay, so we have a workshop.
Yeah.
On August 29th.
Then we can
maybe
make another
2 days.
Talk. Yeah, maybe 2 days.
Maybe 2 days. So if
I think we should talk about the Davos program.
Yeah.
The reset.
So the central bankers approved their crypto, the G7 central bankers approved their crypto plan in June last year, and then they approved the going direct plan in Jackson Hole in August.
Yeah.
And they proceeded, and then the World Economic Forum put up this website, The Global Reset. And it's interesting, it was marketed, as soon as it went up, I got an email inviting me to log in and sign up and review it. You know, so clearly they were prepared to market to everybody. And it's really a phenomenal marketing to non-financial people.
Mm-hmm.
Have you spent any time there?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. Yeah, they want to have the goodwill of they know without the site's kind of a consent of the population, they won't get through.
Right.
So they have to lie people into accepting something which they don't understand. but they are selling it as their salvation solution, which of course is an illusion. Well, looking at the comet, I can say the chance that all these terrible dark plans won't work is quite big. But it needs comets like you and us and Rappaport and Corbett that they go on.
And
Davidson.
The eye on the horizon is the question, well, okay, what will work?
Yeah.
So we all need to, what we've been doing in the past will not work. And I think their plans right now will not work.
No.
So we have to ask the question, okay, well, what? I mean, what it's not enough to sit around and say.
It's so superficial. They want to have only external changes. But the big thing is, I think the big problem is also, since 1899, an old era with a spiritual program of 5,000 years radius in history called the Kali Yuga has ended. And we are in a new area, but many people don't see this.
When did the Kali Yuga end?
1899.
Okay.
Exactly. It was starting at the death, that's the Indian tradition, of Arjuna. Not Arjuna, the god there.
So to me, you don't need a lot of people, but you need enough people to shift into the divine human and keep their eye on the horizon and work together towards what can
and stimulate others to do the same.
Yeah.
That's the solution. Right. But that can only be independent Gideon people who are not afraid, who are competent, and who do the right, have the right inner attitude towards the higher.
It's interesting. One of the greatest struggles I've had for many years is to try and communicate that we have to organize with people who are faithful and competent. And we need to leave the not competent behind. We can't help them unless we limit our efforts to people who have integrity.
Yeah.
In other words, the field for the divine intelligence to work through us, you have to have integrity. And this has been the biggest struggle, is to keep that which doesn't have integrity separate.
I totally agree.
So how do I communicate that?
Well, you do it all the time in your journal, in your talks. And I think we should not have too big expectations of Mars success, you know. But we have to be happy if here is somebody waking up, here is somebody waking up, and they have to circle. That's a homeopathic working.
The people who stole $21 trillion spend an infinite amount of money trying to pull people back to not integrity.
Yeah.
Or interest them in things that don't have integrity.
Well, but that has
the QAnon.
That has the Ahrimanics
yes.
stamp. This being is a very good knower of the lower human nature.
Yeah, entertainments.
Entertainments.
Disinformation.
Who is recruited in the CIA and other quarters? People who they know exactly their weaknesses.
Right.
So one day, I never forget, was it in a movie? But I think it was authentic. When Kennedy was elected, on the day of election, he was called in by Hoover, and Hoover went with Kennedy, just elected president, to a box or to a cupboard, drew something.
Are you thinking Eisenhower, not Hoover?
No. It was
Hoover?
It was Hoover, Edgar Hoover.
Ah!
From the FBI.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He said, look, and he showed him a number of tapes, and he said, Mr. President, on the day of his election, what we have here about you is enough for an impeachment. And then he put the drawer back. And so Kennedy knew, I have to be careful. They know, of course, and that's the principle. They collect all facts about the ordinary lower human nature. But Ahriman is, of course, not an expert on the higher human nature.
Right.
That is what we have to do at Mecca, Michael.
One of my favorite photos of Kennedy is We did a wonderful book review and interview of a book on the assassination of Douglas Forrestal, James Forrestal, who was James Forrestal was the first Secretary of Defense, who had mm-hmm. been Kennedy's mentor mm-hmm. when Kennedy was in ONI. Forrestal had run the Navy before he became Secretary of Defense. Anyway, so Forrestal was assassinated by essentially the same factions that assassinated Kennedy. And in April of 1963, so he was assassinated in November, he was at Arlington Cemetery and then impromptu asked his security detail to take him to Forrestal's grave. And he visited Forrestal's grave completely unscheduled. And you could tell he was having a conversation with Forrestal.
He had that?
He understood what he was going up against.
Yeah. He was an intelligent man. Yeah. Well.
So it's been wonderful to have this conversation with you. Before we go, the action we take from this is we write a poem of freedom. We sign up for the present age. I think that would be very good. Unless we speak German, then we sign up for Europa. If you're in the neighborhood of Basel, you come on the 29th or the 28th. How did they find out?
On our webpage. Either it is in Scala in town or it is here.
Okay.
That is can be found on our webpage.
Okay.
www.perseus.ch.
Okay. So before I leave Switzerland, I have to see the comet. So how? What? I have to see the comet. What time?
Yes.
What time do you want to be tonight?
10-ish, 10:30.
Okay, so we can
join, yes.
Yeah, we try again.
Yeah.
Okay, ladies
and... Now we have seen it spiritually, and now we might see it physically.
Physically.
Very great. Thank you, Catherine.
Thank you, Thomas. It's always... It's like coming and drinking at an oasis.
Ooh, what a gigantic compliment. I don't deserve it anyway.
Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us again on the Solari Report. You have a wonderful day.
Thank you.